Today, I plan to finish the discussion about the quantum effective action and use this to start to discuss renormalization in 5-4 theory. So the concept of renormalization in perturbation theory and in the context of quantum field theory, so which is going to take a few lectures. So I hope to have finished by the end of the week. But not sure. Okay, so first, the quantum effective action. And I'm going to show you why this object that I have defined in a quite abstract way is in fact very useful and important in theoretical physics. So let's remember, and I'm going to treat the example of the 5-4 theory, so the one we are used to. So we start from the again from the let me note this. Phi minus Laplacian plus m squared phi, so that's just obtained by integrating by parts the derivative terms, plus Copley constant divided by g by factorial 4, phi 4. Okay? And I'm working in the Euclidean as usual, just to get not be annoyed by I factors, but the discussion is the same for the theory at real time, and we have introduced an object which is the effective action, gamma of this var phi, which is a classical background field. It's a name of the name of the object is just a classical function. Classical function, which is allows to define a generating functional, and this is defined as the Legendre transform of the generating functional of connected functions. So it's defined times g times var phi minus w of g, where this is connected function. Generating functional, and this is a source term for this generating functional, which allows to compute connected green functions of the field operator phi at various points. Okay. And of course, this is a Legendre transform, so there is a relation between g, the source term, and phi, the background field, which is that the background phi is the functional derivative of the value of g with respect to a variation of the source term g at a given point x. That's the relation, Legendre transform. Okay. And I derived a bit sketchily because I just missed, I skipped a few steps of the proof, but I give the essential proof that, in fact, at one loop, namely at first order in the quantum correction, this gamma of phi is given by the following very compact formula. This is for a classical theory, just the classical action. And if you look at the first quantum correction of this object, this is one half of the trace of the log of an operator, which is just the second functional derivative of the classical action. So something that I denote second derivative of the action taken at for a field phi, which is a background field, and that's it. And then we get higher order terms, which can be derived with a bit of more work. So it's a very compact formula, classical, first quantum correction, one loop correction, because it's the same order h bar. It's very compact, but it's very also a bit mysterious if you don't think about what this is. So what I'm going to show you is how what this means for the 5-4 theory and how we recover the one particle irreducible contribution, the one particle irreducible diagram, namely the one particle irreducible functions that we discussed during the last lecture. Okay, so let's go back to the 5-4. So S is just the 5-4 theory, it's just the action for the 5-4 theory. We have to replace the quantum field by the background field. This object is a second derivative. So it's in fact an operator. It's a kernel of an operator. It's an operator. So its kernel so depends on the two points. So it's a kernel, an operator. And the kernel of this operator is just the operator obtained when you take two derivatives with respect to phi. So you derive with respect to phi at a given point x, and you derive with another phi at point y. So you obtain a function of x and y. And what you obtain is just, well, you take, this is a quadratic form. So the second derivative of this quadratic form are the matrix element of the quadratic form. So it's the operator minus nabla plus m squared with respect to x. I'm going to see what it means to be x and y here. And the second derivative of this is just g divided by 2. Because we take two derivatives of 5-4. So the value of phi, but at the power 2, so it's the background field 2 at point x. And of course, times just a delta function of x minus y. So that's a Dirac delta function. So that's the kernel. So it means that when you apply this object to a function, as second derivative of phi, and to apply it to some function f, and evaluate it. So this is a new function. New function. And evaluate it at a given point x, you just get minus the Laplacian plus m squared plus g over 2 times phi squared of x. This is a second order differential operator, but which depends on the function, applied to the function f of x. So this is what it means. Okay. And you see that this operator is just the operator for the free theory plus an interacting term. So what we need to do is just to consider what this operator is for the free theory. Where g equals 0. And for the free theory, this disappears. So the second derivative operator of the free theory, of course, doesn't depend on the background field, and it's just minus lambda, the operator minus nabla, minus delta, so the Laplacian operator, plus m squared. Okay. And therefore, it's inverse. We have seen that when deriving. Well, let's keep that, but that's not important. minus 1 is just
the propagator.
So xy is just g of x minus y. This is the propagator. Okay. So now the idea, of course, of doing perturbation theory in this is just the expanded log. So you see that you can write now. So let's concentrate on trace of log, first on log of this operator, minus delta, percent squared, the g divided by 2, pi squared. So this is a differential operator which depends on the function x. So I'm going to do a bit of formal manipulation because this is a differential operator, but think about those operators as matrices and you are on safe ground. So let's write this as log of minus delta plus n squared. Oh, and I'm going to keep the trace. That's better. So this is the trace. The log of minus delta plus m squared times the operator identity plus minus delta plus m squared minus 1 times g over 2 pi squared. Okay, I've done nothing. I've rewritten this operator as a product of two operators. Okay? And now, the trace of a log is a log of a determinant. So we have the determinant of a product of two operators. And the determinant of a product of a matrices is a product of the determinant of matrices. The same for operator. So we can rewrite this as trace log of minus delta plus m squared, which is just something which is characteristic of the free theory, plus trace of log of 1 plus minus delta plus m squared times g divided by 2 times phi squared. One plus a product of two operators. This operator whose kernel is a propagator, and this operator which is just multiplication by the function var phi squared. So it's not a function, it's an operator, which is means multiplying a function f by the function pi squared. Okay. And now there is a g here. So thinking about perturbation theory, g is a small expansion parameter, so expand in g. So expand in g. So let's concentrate just on this term. This one, you come back a bit later, but that's something of the free theory. Let's expand in g in a series in g. It's just the expansion of log of 1 plus something. So this is sum over k from 1 to infinity of, well, you know what's expansion of the log of 1 plus x. It's x minus x squared divided by 2 plus etc. So we get sum minus 1 to the power k minus 1 divided by k gk, and then the trace of the logarithm of this operator where there is a g divided by 2, that's, and then you have phi squared, the operator phi squared, and minus 1 force times phi squared. So a series of this operator, and you have this. K times. Okay? So, now, and there is of course no log, I am very sorry. Of course, the log has disappeared. We have expand in a series in Z the log. So we have the trace of the products of operator. So now let's go back, come back to this position space picture. In position space, what does means the trace? The trace is just the sum over the diagonal matrix element. But the diagonal matrix element, it means just the sum over position. So what is this trace, this big trace? Each trace in position space. This trace of the products of operator k times is just, it means integral over d on some point x times the matrix element of this operator, which is g of x1 minus x2. Then this operator is just a multiplication by a matrix phi square. So it's an operator which is diagonal in the x representation. And its matrix element for point x2 is just phi squared of x2. So this is phi squared of x2. So this is a matrix element, the kernel in position space of this operator. But now we have to multiply this operator by the same operator. So multiply the operator means to take the convolution in position space of the kernels. So it means that again we get g of x2 minus some other point x3, phi squared of x3, and we integrate over d dx2. We convolute this object with this object. And we go on. K times. This is the first time, the second term, and we end up at the end operation for the k term into a g of x of k minus 1. No, xk, because that's a k term. Xk minus some other point. Phi squared of some x. And of course, when we do that, we integrate over d of x up to integral over xk. So this x1 the matrix is a index of the matrix there, and x is the index of the matrix of the operator here, but we take the trace. So we take a diagonal element between this object viewed as a kernel between x1 and x. So taking the trace means simply that identify x with x1 and integrating over x1. Okay. So, you see that in position space, this object is just a convolution. So this is just an integral over k points of the products of the function of the square of the background field at x1 up to phi squared at point xk. times these products of propagator. And let me call these products of propagator a function gamma k, one loop. Well, not exactly gamma, but let me call it, let me call it g. Well, not g. Okay, let me call this function f of x1,
xk.
Okay. So this function f at one loop of the element which appears is just so this f1, fk at one loop of x1, xk, so it's a function of k position vectors, is just the products, it's just zg of x1 minus x2, g of xk minus x1. So it's a product of propagator in position space. So it corresponds in the language of Feynman diagrams to just a closed loop of propagators, where you have a propagator at x1, a propagator x3, up to
xk.
So it can be represented just as a one loop Feynman diagram, products of propagator integrated over those vertices. And simply, what is this object? The fact that you have a phi squared of x1 means that at each point, well, that's a bit misleading, so this is x1, you attached two phi of x1. So what? So this is a representation. Let's keep that. This is a representation of this function. And this means that this trace log has a interpretation as a sum of Feynman diagram. You see? This object, this trace log here, the trace log. Well, let me maybe use the other blackboard because it's going to be. So you see that finally this trace log of this is just sum over k, g to the power k, minus 1 to the power k minus 1, divided 2 to the power k, divided by k, times a product of diagrams that I can represent in the following way. I have this loop, this closed Feynman diagram. Where is that? K vertices. And to each vertex, 1, 2, 3, up to K, I attach a phi. I attach a phi. I attach two phi. Let's see. See? with now slightly different Feynman rule. So I use the standard Feynman rules, which mean that a line like that is a propagator, g of x1 minus x2. Here you recover the usual vertices. You recover the usual vertex of the 5-4 theory, where to each vertex you associate a factor g, a coupling constant. This is a g which is there because here you have a one loop k vertices Feynman graph, Feynman diagram. Okay, but here you see that the phi square are just attached to the point x, each point. There is no propagator. So I used just a new rule that between an external vertex for this diagram to which is attached a phi and an internal vertex, I don't attached the usual propagator, but I attach just the delta function of z minus x. So that we can rewrite, for instance, phi squared of x is just integral dz1, integral dz2, phi of z1, phi of z2, but then delta of z1 minus x, delta of z2 minus 6. It's a bit of a, you know, heavy notation for just, but that's convenient because that is just delta of z minus x is just minus delta plus m squared applied to the usual propagator. That's the definition of the propagator. So this is often denoted also like this. You take the propagator and you bar it a wedge, which means that you replace this propagator by one. So it's called often a truncated propagator. Truncated because you replace the contribution of this leg in position space by just a delta function. Yes?
What about the term trace of the log of minus delta plus m squared?
I'm going to come back later to this. So that's the second term here. Okay? I don't know who has the question, but I'm going to discuss it a bit. Okay. So we have the standard Feynman rules plus this one for truncated legs. And so you see that this is a sum from k equal 1 to infinity of a contribution of one loop Feynman diagrams just with the new Feynman rule for the external legs. And of course, I'm sorry, the usual Feynman rules mean that there is a minus g attached to the vertex, hence the minus one. So you have the standard rule. You have the new one for the truncated legs. You can check that two things. You can check that 1 over k times 2 to the power k is just the symmetry factor for this diagram. Remember, to each diagram is attached a combinatorial factor which counts by how many ways applying Vick theorem you get this, which is just the ordinary symmetry factor. Yes?
Sorry, I don't understand. I have various questions. So in the truncated propagator, why is there a 4 underneath the...
The truncated propagator is just for the external legs.
But in the equation, it says it is a ball, Z, then there's a bar, and there is another ball, and underneath is a 4. That 4 should be, is an X?
Pardon?
It's like,
I represent a delta function either by this, dashy line or by your usual line with a cut,
okay,
which means I replaced it. That's standard notation.
And
it's just a graphical notation, as Feynman rule in mathematics. Yes?
And what would be then the point that is attached on the diagram above? So we have the circle and say 3. There's the dashed line, and there's a phi. Where there's that phi, there should be an x something, right, or a y something.
Yeah, there is just a truncated line, if you prefer, here. So this is a truncated line, this is a truncated line, and these are ordinary propagators. And of course, there is also one here and one here. Okay? Well,
I don't see how that evaluates into the phi squared.
No, because I attached the phi squared to each. So the rule is that to each vertex, I attached a phi of z. So you see. So in fact, the Feynman rule is that I get this, and I get I attach to each vertex, to each external vertex, and so to each external vertex, like this, in my loop, so this is a big loop, to each external vertex z is attached, contributes, is gives a phi of z. You see? What?
Times the delta function.
The delta function is contained here. So in other words, you can write this as, and remember, with those notation, we have of course 2k external vertices. Okay, so I think it's just time to go back to the to my notation. What I get is that quantum effective action here at one loop. The one loop contribution to the quantum effective action. So it's a h bar term. It's h bar times this sum over n equal 2k. Integral ddz1 up ddzn. Well, if you normalize things correctly, you are going to see that there is a 1 over factorial n, because you have to label the trick. And you have phi of z1, phi of zn. Then you have a function of the n equal 2k points, where this gamma 1 loop of z1 up to zn is just given by the sum of the one loop one particle irreducible diagrams of the 5-4 theory of a factor. So there is a factor h bar here, which is because we are going at one loop, so we can rewrite this as h bar to the power b, with b equal 1, because that we are at one loop. We have a factor minus g to the power k, with k equal n divided by 2, because a one loop diagram with 2n external legs must have k vertices in phi to the 4. We have the symmetry factor associated to the graph G. But the graph G, there is only one diagram here, which is this one, times the amplitudes, the irreducible amplitude for this graph G, which is a function of Z1, Zn, and the irreducible amplitude for the graph Z1, Zn is given by those Feynman rules, given by Feynman rules for the diagrams with truncated or amputated, often one has amputated external legs, which are the rule that I gave here, okay? And if you think about it more, you see that I forgot here the factor 1/2. So the factor C is just, there is a 1/2, an additional 1/2. So CG in this case is 1/k times 2 times k plus 1. This is the symmetry factor. For this diagram, a diagram with one loop, k vertices, and therefore 2k amputated legs. Okay. So. Okay. So now let me finish by coming back to. Well, first let me give some example, because this is still a bit abstract. And then I come back to the question about what's happening for the trace log of minus delta plus n squared. So, example, k equal 1. Yes?
Could you explain again how the amputation shows up?
How?
The amputation or truncation shows up.
Goes up, I'll show on the example. K equal 1. What is the one particle irreducible diagram of the 5-4 theory is just one vertex. It's just this diagram where you have one propagator that start and end up at the same point x1. And you have two amputated legs, z1 and z2. So this has the symmetry factor of 1/2. What is its amplitude? It's integral dx. This is just delta of z1 minus 6. Delta of z2 minus 6, and then you have g of 0, the propagator at coinciding point. Okay? Oh, one important result. I'm sorry. Warning. Here, there is a minus 1 to the power k minus 1. While to each vertex is associated, according to the standard Feynman rules, the factor minus g. So there is a minus 1, an additional minus 1 here. For all the diagrams, yes?
Which is the symmetry factor, 1 over k to the k plus 1 or 1 over k to 2k?
Well, it turns out that this is the symmetry factor of this diagram. And remember, when working with the ordinary, you know, diagrams, we saw that 1 half is the symmetry factor of this diagram. So we recover by functional integration the symmetry factor that we would have got by Vick theorem. Yes?
Can you please explain again how the amputation or truncation shows up in the calculation we performed on the expansion of the trace of the log?
Yes, it's just because to each term is just associated a phi squared of x. Okay, so here you have some propagator. Well, let me use a cross here. Here you have a propagator that ends up at x2. Here you have another propagator that ends up at x2. And here you have phi squared of x2. You don't have g of x2 minus z times phi squared of z squared. You just have phi squared of x2. So you just rewrite phi squared of x2. As I said it, you rewrite phi squared of x as integral of a position of the, some external vertices of phi and those external vertices times a delta function between the external vertex and the internal vertex. So that's how it shows up. Okay. So it's just a complicated way to represent just the fact that two points coincide, but it makes a contact with the general rules of perturbation theory, where usually to a line is associated a propagator, a function of the two endpoints, and simply when you apply that to what you are computing is a quantum effective action, you get just a delta function. So the points have to coincide. Okay, so this is a diagram for k equal 1. Okay, yes?
I'm still confused with what Shue was asking. So here your other symmetry factor is 2k plus 1, and there it's 2k, right?
That's because here I've computed the trace log. I've extended the trace log. But in the gamma function, you have a h bar 1 half of trace log.
Okay.
So that's one additional 1 half. So this additional 1 half comes from one half comes from the one half of trace of log. Okay? It's just that. So in fact, this is
then there should be one quarter.
Pardon?
It's just because the one factor here is one half.
That's true. That's true. Yes, you are right. Okay, so that's 1/4. That's a bit strange. But the 1/2 comes from there. Okay, let me check. I'll check. That's probably written in the notes, but I'll check. So now k equal 2. Well, the only diagram is a diagram like that with two points, x1 and x2. And amputated legs here and here. Z1, Z2, Z3, Z4. Therefore, the amplitude associated to this, of course, this is just 1/2 of delta of Z1 minus Z2 times G of 0. Amplitude for this graph. This is this. So again, you have a propagator here, you have a propagator here. And you have delta function here, you have delta function here, you have delta function here, and you have delta function here. So what you have is delta of Z1 minus Z2, delta of Z3 minus Z4, because this point, and this point have to be the same. And then you have the products of two propagators. So you have G of Z1 minus Z3 squared, which is the Feynman. So this is the amplitudes of this irreducible diagram, and this is the amplitude of this irreducible diagram. Okay? And etc. For k equals 3, you get this diagram with amplituded legs here, 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 here. So you have those 2 points have to be equal, those 3 points have to be equal, those 3 points have to be equal, and you have the products of the propagator between the 3 points. So this is a triangle diagram. This is a bubble diagram. This is a one loop diagram. So this diagram, let's call it a bubble. That's it. This is called often the tadpole diagram, because it looks like a tad with just two small legs. And this is a triangle, etc. Okay. And finally, if you go to Fourier transform, or if you go to momentum space representation, this diagram in Fourier transform, the propagator is just 1 over p squared plus m squared. The truncated amputated leg is just going to be the delta function, the Fourier transform of a delta function, so it's just 1. You have just suppressed the contribution of the propagator in momentum space, and so the amplitude of this diagram when you have an incoming momentum here and an incoming momentum here is just delta of p1 plus p2 times g of 0, contribution of the propagator. This diagram, if you have incoming momenta P1, P2, P3, P4, is just delta of P1 plus P2 plus P3 plus P4 times the Fourier transform of this, which is a convolution of two propagators. So if we denote the incoming momenta, total incoming momenta here by P, equal P1 plus P2. And of course, then the total incoming momentum here is minus P through this channel. Then this object is just integral d dp. I'm sorry. Then you have momentum flow allowed. Let me finish and then I answer your question. D dk over 2 pi to the power d times 1 over k squared plus m squared times 1 over p plus k squared plus m squared, which is the amplitude of this irreducible one particle diagram, the bubble diagram, in momentum space. Yes?
Do we still put bars to show that
the legs are truncated.
Pardon? Here the legs are truncated, of course. That's why we don't get the propagator for those external legs, because they are amputated. Hence, you have just one here, instead of what we got in the expression of the connected function. Okay, etc. And well, I promised you a break. So either we make it no, or I just discuss just this diagram. The first term, the trace log of minus delta plus m squared.
Should that be a p plus k squared?
That's a p plus k. I'm sorry, that's a typo, of course. Here there is a momentum. Here there is a momentum k. So this is 1 over k squared plus m squared. Here there is a momentum p plus k. So this is a 1 over p plus k squared plus m squared. Of course. Yeah, sorry. Thank you. So this is a representation in position space. And this is a position in momentum space. So you recover the Feynman diagram that I've been studying in QFT 1 course, which mainly use the momentum space representation, because here you were interested in amplitudes, scattering amplitudes, which of course depend on the momenta of the particle and not of the position of the particle. Okay. Yeah. Okay, let me just discuss in 2 minutes the last term. Or the first term. So what about the first term? What about the first term? Which is a term with k equals zero. That's a term of the, that comes from the free theory. Okay, this is the h bar. 1/2 trace log of minus delta plus m squared. Well, so you can express it in terms of the kernel of the log of the operator minus delta plus m squared. But if you go to Fourier transform, you can write this just at h bar 1/2 integral dx. Well, you have to integrate over all the position space. Integral over dk divided by 2 pi squared times the log of k squared plus m squared. Okay? So you see here that you have integrate, you have integrate over all position of space, but you had integrate over all position of space here over z over the z. So you better rewrite this as a z if you prefer. That's the position of some external vertex anymore. And you have the integrate over k, so it's like an integral over the momenta flowing through a loop, internal loops. But you replace the propagator, but the log of the propagator, or the log of the inverse of the propagator. So, convenient representation. Represent this by this term by h bar minus h bar 1/2 times the amplitude associated to this closed loop with no vertex. So this means just integral over dk of minus the log of this. Well, it's convenient to have a minus here. So this represents integral over dk over 2 pi to the power d times log of 1 over k squared plus m squared. So it's just a graphical representation of that, of this diagram. So it's a vertex with a propagator that close onto itself.
Why is there a minus sign?
It's just a choice of just my choice. Okay.
And what happened?
And it's just because here you have a minus g to the power k minus one. Well, you have a minus one to the power. Here you had a minus one. You had a minus 1 to the power k minus 1. So for k equals 0, it gives a minus 1. So it's a choice, my choice. Okay? So it just, so you can represent this term by just this integral that you represent by this diagram. Of course, well, if you have it, this is just the quantum correction. Since it's over the h bar to the vacuum energy of the free field. The sum of the ground state energy of the for each oscillator in the A and A dagger creation and alienation operator. So this is a factor 1/2, because you know the energy h, because this h bar over 1/2 is just the ground state energy of an harmonic oscillator with pulsation 1. This is just ground state of the harmonic. Oscillator. And this integral over k diverge at large k. This reflects the fact that the vacuum energy of the free field is infinite. That's a famous problem of the vacuum energy of a quantum field. Okay. Okay. And then you see, if you do that, you can express the one loop correction to the free energy as a sum of diagrams where you start. Well, this one plus this one with amputated legs plus this one, etc. So you have all the one loop diagram with amputated legs, including the one which has no leg. And then you have a fully consistent representation with the convenient representation of the first term. It fits in the general formulation. Okay, let's end up here. Break 5 minutes, and then I'll start to discuss precisely those problems of ultraviolet singularity in those amplitudes, because that's where now we have isolated the point, the part in perturbation series, the diagram where the problem which requires renormalization is located. Okay. So let's meet at 10, at 5 past 10.
Thank you. What happened to the integral ddz?
Pardon?
What happened to the integral ddz? So we did a Fourier transform on the
yes
term, and we had an integral over space, which is
yeah, that's an integral over space, but it should be there because it's the total energy of the vacuum in space and time. You see, so the action, you know, the action is an the action of a theory. Is an integral of a whole space and time. That's d dx, so that's dt times dx. So imagine that your theory, in addition to this, imagine that your action is d dx, well, 1/2 of d phi squared plus the general potential, where the general potential v of phi is first an energy density at zero plus m squared over 2 pi squared. That's it. An energy density, a classical energy density. It doesn't change the dynamics of the field, of course. It's just a normalization of the energy. But then in the action, when phi equals zero, at the classical background, you still get integral d dx times E0. So you get E0, the classical energy density in space, times the volume of space-time, which is infinite. So this is just the volume of space-time.
But what I meant is, in our convenient representation, that integral doesn't appear, right? When I have that closed loop, since I don't have any position vertices, then I don't get an integral.
No, it's there, because it's there for the following reason. Write this. The trace, you first represent it at d dx, and you consider the matrix element of the kernel of this operator between two points, the same point. So now, consider the kernel at coinciding point of this operator. It's an arbitrary power of m minus m of the propagator. This is just d dk over 2 pi to the power d, 1 over k squared plus m squared to the power m. Because we are just, you know, taking the product of m propagators. So this is true for any m, formally real. But then we use the analytic continuation principle of theoretical physics, that when you have something you can integrate, you take the derivative of this quantity, minus if you prefer, at m equals zero, and you get log of minus delta Sm squared between xx here, and here you get integral d dk over 2 pi d times log of this k squared Sm squared. Okay? So that's a physicist. That's a physicist derivation, but if you work mathematically more precisely, for instance, taking a finite, you know, discretizing space-time, finite space-time, so we have matrices, but the log you can define it properly, you diagonalize, etc., and you end up. So that's a correct result. That's a correct result. That's just a short way to derive the result. And you see that hence the integral Higgs, the integral of a Z comes from the trace. And then the integral of a K comes from the representation in momentum space of this diagonal element.
Okay. Yeah, no, I meant more in the closed loop with no vertex.
Yes.
How does that integral appear?
Well, it appears just, well, I just write that this integral, so that's just the value of the trace of the log of this operator, properly regularized. So I just choose to add a new Feynman rules, which say that to this integral is represented by this diagram. So it's just a representation. I have no.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a representation which makes that this contribution can be represented also as an irreducible diagram with just one loop. Because with the rule of reducibility, this graph has no vertex. So when you cut it, you get the empty graph, which is irreducible. Yes?
And this contribution is infinite. The
pardon?
Contribution, the contribution from this term is infinite.
Is it?
Infinite.
Yes, it's infinite. This is infinite. But this is going to be infinite, and this is also going to be infinite in four dimensions. So, now we are going to discuss that. So now, I discuss the structure of ultraviolet divergence of the theory. Okay? So we have seen from that starting from the 5-4 theory, we can isolate in perturbation theory the core of the, you know, of perturbation theory, which are the one particle irreducible graph. Okay? And I'm going to concentrate on the one particle irreducible two-point function and the one particle irreducible four-point function. So the two-point function is going to be the sum of the irreducible diagram. So we have computed the contribution of the one-loop diagram. But you should not forget the contribution of the zero-loop diagram, which is the classical action itself. So the two-point function is just a functional derivative of this when you replace phi by the background field and take its second derivative with respect to phi. So it's just going to be this operator, minus nabla plus m squared. You see? So the two-point function, let's go, let me go to its gamma 2. Gamma means that it's irreducible. It's just going to be given by minus nabla plus m squared. And then we have seen that this is g over 2 times the amplitude represented by this diagram with amputated legs. Okay? With an h-bar, of course. So this is the contribution of the classical action. This is the first quantum correction, radiative correction, with a loop. Okay. So if you think about this object, of course, so this object can be represented in momentum space or in position space. We have seen that in momentum space, this diagram is just a delta function times g of zero. So it's more convenient to consider the two-point function. So I consider this object, let me denote it as the irreducible two-point function. I have amputated legs. And here I have a momentum p1, and here I have incoming momentum p2. So I'm using for the two-point functions, we'll come back to the four-point function later, I'm using the momentum representation. Okay? going from the momentum representation to the position space representation is just performing a Fourier transform with respect to P1 and P2. So that's equivalent. So what is this? The Fourier transform of GIF. So there is first a 2 pi d times delta of P1 plus P2, which comes out from all the diagrams because of translation invariance. And then I get P1 squared plus M squared. This is the Fourier transform of this object. Okay. Plus G divided by 2 times this object, the amplitudes, which is just, well, let me call this T plus higher order terms. With T equals the integral d dk over 2 pi to the power d times 1 over k squared plus m squared. Okay. And up to now, since I have the coupling constant there, and since I know that expanding in the coupling constant is the same thing as expanding over h bar, I will set h bar equal 1 for simplicity. Okay, so this is a two-point irreducible function in momentum space. This depends on P1, and I'm going to denote P1 equal P in the following for simplicity. And this T, of course, doesn't depend on K, but it depends on M. So let's call it okay. That's one. Okay. And you see that, as I mentioned already, that T of M is infinite. It's infinite as long as the dimension of space-time is larger or equal to 2. It's logarithmically divergent at equal 2, and it's diverged like a power of the maximal momenta for the larger than. Okay? So this is a famous ultraviolet divergence problem that I discussed in and I was discussing already the free field. Okay? And it comes from the basic structure of quantum field theory. So that's not just a technical problem. It comes from the fact that the quantum fluctuation of the gauge of the free field are very, very important at short distance or high momenta. So it's a basic feature. Quantum field theory. That's something that you do not observe. Okay. So how do we deal with this problem? Well, this problem was noticed by the founder of quantum field theory, so even before World War II, and they struggled for a few decades. So one trick, which is both technical, is to regularize the theory, which means that change a bit the behavior of the theory so that it has a better short distance behavior, and then try to see whether you can recover a sensible theory when you remove the regularization. Okay? So there are many ways to regularize the theory, and let me mention a few ones. I think you have already maybe met them, either in lecture or in seminars. One way is to put the theory on a lattice with a mesh A. Because if you have a theory in a mesh A, so that's a position space, in momentum space, in K space, you replace the integral over infinite momenta by an integral over what's called the Brillouin zone in condensed matter. So the momenta cannot be larger than something of order 1 over a. Okay, so that's the first regularization. A second way of regularizing the problem is to modify the propagator. Of course, you change the propagator when you do that, because you change the propagator by the propagator on a lattice, which is a Fourier transform of a modified propagator in the Brillouin zone. But you can do other things. So modify the propagator. And then the simplest modification that we can think of is to state that the propagator, well, g hat of k, which is 1 over k squared plus m squared, is well defined if the momenta are smaller than some big scale lambda. So lambda is very, very big, and it's called the momentum cutoff. Okay. And you said that zero k is larger than lambda. So this is called the sharp cutoff. Regularization. Okay? Well, you have, so this is the first modification. You have more advanced regularization, for instance, a modification which is called the Poly-Villar regularization, which is more convenient. Regularization, which consists in modifying the propagator in the following way. You change it by 1 over k squared plus m squared times lambda squared over k squared plus lambda squared. So in this case, the propagator is non-zero if k is larger than lambda, so it's a smoother. It's smoother. But you see that when k is much smaller than lambda, this is 1, so you recover the usual propagator. And when k squared is larger than lambda, the propagator behaves like 1 over k to the 4 instead of 1 over k to the 2. So this kind of integral are going to behave in a better way at large k. Okay? So that's the second kind of regularization. A third kind of regularization, that maybe we'll discuss that a bit later, has been invented by physicists in the 70s, I think. It's called dimensional regularization. And it consists in defining the theory for a dimension of space-time, which is not an integer anymore. So you go from d equal 2, or d equal 4, to d non-integer. And in fact, an even complex. So it's something which seems quite wild. But as I told you, theoretical physicists like when they have a parameter, make it complex and see what's happened to the expression. And so if you make complex masses, if you make complex momenta, space, time, why not make complex the dimension of space time? And in fact, it's a very nice representation, dimensional regularization. It's a very nice in perturbation theory. The problem is that this regularization works at the level of defining a functional integral. So they are non-perturbative. You can prove theorem using those. This is perturbative. Only. So, it's not useful. Even some mathematicians have tried to make sense of it at a non-perturbative level, but that's much, much more difficult. Okay, so this idea of regularization is both physical, because you change the behavior of space-time, so you can think about it in a physical way. It has, some bonus. You just control in a much, much better way the ultraviolet divergence, but you have also, of course, some drawback. The main drawback is that you are not dealing with a sensible quantum field theory. In some sense, you have to lose something. For instance, in using a lattice, you lose Poincaré invariance, of course. You keep just a very small subgroup of the Poincaré group or of the Euclidean group, which is the group of discrete translation and of discrete rotation. Okay. If you modify the propagator, well, in fact, you are going to lose unitarity and causality, because you lose locality. For instance, you can check that if you do that, in fact, in your theory, you are going to have ghosts in the theory, because if you look at this propagator as a pole at k squared equal minus m squared, which is a physical pole, and at k squared equal minus lambda squared. And at k squared equal minus lambda squared, the residue of the pole is lambda squared divided by minus lambda squared plus m squared. And if lambda squared is much larger than m squared, this is negative. So you have a propagator with a pole with a negative residue. And from the Chellen-Lehmann representation, it corresponds to some fiducial particle with mass lambda, but with a negative probability amplitude. So you have what physicists call ghosts, negative probabilities. And negative probabilities, of course, are very bad in physics. In mass, it's okay, but in physics. So here, for instance, you lose Poincaré. And here you lose unitarity. Okay. And here you lose a sensible space-time picture. Yes?
But if you lose Poincaré or you lose causality, then how can you talk about quantum field theory? Like, these things are super related to quantum field theory, right?
Well, the point is that the idea is that work with a cutoff. Control ultraviolet problem. That's what renormalization do. Those when it works, and then take continuum limits. Namely, and renormalization amounts to take a slightly more general theory, modify a bit the theory in a minimal way in order to have a better ultraviolet behavior. So then you take the continuum limit, check, and then check that Poincaré invariance, unitarity, locality, and therefore locality and causality is restored. Then you are fine. So if it works, you have defined a proper theory. If it doesn't work, usually it means that you have a problem with some of the symmetries of the theory, so you run into a problem of anomalies. Okay? So,
question.
Yes.
What's the problem with the sharp cutoff? What problem
is the sharp? Well, you see, the sharp cutoff is a special case of polyvillar. So here also you have problem with unitarity. And causality, B, and locality. So it's the same. It's a special, this is a smoother kind of regulation than this one. Okay. Well, I'm going to keep that. So, okay. Well, I still have one blackboard. Blackboard. Okay, and during the last minute, let's study this integral. So I'm going to use the sharp cutoff. So that now, well, this term, T of M, is now integral d dk over 2 pi total to the power d, 1 over k squared plus m squared. But now I integrate over a ball in momentum space with diameter lambda. So in momentum space, k, I integrate over a ball with radius lambda. And I do not integrate over lambda. So then this integral is finite. And well, you can check that. So now T of M depends on lambda. Depends on the mass of the series and of lambda. And you can check that the most divergent part of the lambda, so when lambda is very large, so when k is of order lambda, if k is very large, you can neglect m squared. So as long as lambda is much larger than m, the leading divergent term is given by d dk over k squared. So you can expect that T of m of lambda behaves like lambda d minus 2. Okay? And with some factor that I'm denoting just by a dot, I've not computed. And then, in fact, if you think about it, you can check what's going on for the next term. So you expand in m squared. And then you get another term times m squared times lambda d minus 4, plus et cetera, subleading term. So you see that if you are interested in the case of the dimension of space-time is 4, and that's what I'm going to do, you have two generous terms, a term independent of the mass and a term proportional to the mass. And if you do a bit of calculation, well, I'm going to do to discuss that tomorrow. Okay, so question is compute these two coefficients. But let me end up with a very important remark, which is that you see that the two-point function gamma 2 as a function of p, I don't write the delta function. This is p squared plus m squared plus g divided by 2 times t of m and of lambda. You see? So, remember that I stated that one of the properties, of the fundamental properties of the effective action is that its second derivative is the inverse of the propagator. So it means that, so this is the irreducible two-point function. Now consider the connected two-point function of the five-fold theory, therefore with no amputated diagram, with an incoming momentum P and an outcoming momentum P. Then, so this is the connected two-point function of P. So this is the propagator of the interacting theory. This corresponds to the Fourier transform of phi of x2 for the interacting theory. And therefore, in momentum space, C2 of P is inverse of this. So this is 1 over P squared plus M squared plus G divided 2 T of M, M of lambda at one loop. See? So you see that this has a pole, a P squared equal minus M squared plus G over 2 T of M and of lambda. And from the Chern-Lehmann representation, this pole corresponds to the physical mass of the first excitation of the theory, which are the physical particle states, one particle state. So the physical mass of the one particle state in the theory is given by m physical squared equal m squared plus g over 2 t of m and of lambda. So there is a radiative correction. Of course, there should. And that's exactly what happened in QED. When you are working in QED, you study the propagator of the electron, and you have an E squared times the radiative correction, which corresponds to the emission and absorption of a virtual photon. Which induces a radiative correction to the mass of the electron. Well, here for 5-4 theory, that's the same. We have a propagator for the boson of the theory, plus a radiative correction where you have an emission and absorption at the same point, a virtual boson. So there is, in both cases, radiative correction to the mass. It's a physical effect. And therefore, the ultraviolet divergence which contained in this term, in this diagram, amounts to looking at how do we deal with the radiative correction of the mass? And should we deal with M as a physical parameter of the theory, or should we deal with the physical mass as a physical parameter of the theory? And that's what I'm going to do tomorrow. And so I will show you the basic idea behind renormalization, as it was stated by the founder of the theory in the 50s. Okay. So, thank you and see you tomorrow.